Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Traps Lodge. Here at Traps Lodge, we like to keep things real, and you're not going to get more real than this next episode, and Trapper is going to explain why.
Hey guys, Trapper here. I was up on the mountain with my brother-in-law and Emily's cousin, and I got a little too deep in a bottle of Jack Daniels, and we were having a really good time, and I got on the repeater like a Hunter Burkett, and sorry for the repetitive questions and all that, but Josh thought it was funny and that we shouldn't edit it, so we're just going to let it roll, and you guys can make fun of me and laugh, and I'm good with it. Enjoy.
And guys, this is a bonus episode. We've got night one is the first 30 minutes, and then night two, when we attempted to redo the podcast, is the second 30 minutes. So hang in there and enjoy. We're just keeping it real.
Hey guys, Trapper here with Traps Lodge. Welcome back, everybody. We are up on a mountain in Wyoming with my brother-in-law, Josh Mayfield, and my cousin-in-law,
Adam Lynn,
and we're up here enjoying a jet boil cookout. No electricity, no running water, and you might hear it sizzling in the background. We got some sausage cooking, and Adam's a hell of a cook and hell of a chef. He's making us up a meal tonight, and Adam's got an elk cow tag you put in for a antelope up here in Wyoming. Didn't get drawn, and we got a leftover cow tag for this unit, and so we're up here. My good friend John's elk cabin, and seen quite a few elk, but haven't got lucky yet. Adam's first day out. I invited Josh up here mostly just to be a workhorse. I want to revisit a little bit of our Alaska trip with Josh, and then just kind of BS about everybody's kind of hunting views. So welcome, Adam. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you. Glad to be here, man.
So Adam, what do you like?
I like hunting, period. It doesn't matter if it's bird or deer or squirrel or groundhog. I just like going out and hunting.
You just like being outdoors?
Just like being outdoors. I really didn't grow up in a hunting family. You know, my dad's legally blind, so he's not a very good person to teach you how to hunt. Don't really want a lot of blind people around with firearms.
Right.
But we were fishermen. He took me fishing from the time I was 5 years old, and you know, I just kind of fell in love with being outside. And it kind of grew later on in life. I started hunting by myself when I was like 30 years old, and took my dog and a shotgun out and didn't see a dang thing, and I had a blast.
Yeah, so Adam's not a newbie hunter, but he's new to hunting. And he's learning the ropes, but he's a hell of a cook. He loves the outdoors, and he just loves just the ambiance of a campfire and something to grill on. And we're going to talk a little bit about that more coming up. But let me hit over here with Josh on... So, Josh, I know people are probably getting tired of talking about Alaska, but since you got back before I did, we didn't get to mash up with what happened with your shot and your kill. We kind of kept putting off the actual hunt.
Yeah, putting off the climax a little bit.
So I just want to hit on that briefly. I think in that podcast with M, you just talked about running down the hill, closing the distance. Just tell us a little bit about what you were feeling. I mean, I think at that point, that morning, you and I looked at each other with our six-wheelers breaking down, and we just thought that it was like an unattainable task at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I remember just being in the bottom of the riverbed after the night before, rolling a trailer and our food getting crushed and, you know, equipment just kind of failing on us because it's just been a rough week, and, you know, a lot of the terrain is so rough that
and the weather
just can't last. Yeah, and the weather's so unpredictable. And I remember we go like 500 yards and we're just kind of stoked to get out and start hunting again. And then, you know, Zane's like, "Hey guys, stop, you know, your wheel's falling off." And yeah. So we're like, "Oh gosh," you know, and we kind of, I remember for sure in my head just thinking, and I think I even said it to you, like, we need to go back. Like, it's just, we've had a great time. This is a great experience. Like, it's a beautiful country, and it's probably better if we just start heading back to the main camp. And, well, you're not really that kind of guy. You're more of a, let's just get the job done. And
I'm not one that's good with failure, but let's talk about when you go set out on a hunt like that, and you realize, like, towards the end of the hunt that there might be a time that you may go home without a trophy, and at that point you were okay with that because you'd had a hell of a trip. Because you were on Eric's moose hunt, and you'd enjoyed Alaska, and we did some fishing before that. And there, to me as a guide, there's a separation of, it's not always guaranteed.
Right.
It's a hunt. It is a hunt. And you're not paying for an animal, you're paying for a hunt. And that's paying for the labor and the supplies and everything that it takes to get out in that country and try to perform.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of why we decided to turn this little podcast deal on tonight, because we're sitting here having the banter about it, you know, about, you know, when do you kill an animal, and, you know, if it's opening day for you or it's your first day out there, is that the right time? But, you know, for us in Alaska, it was getting really close to the end there, and I guess a really long story because we were there forever, we could talk about it forever, but, you know, we did find a way to make those machines work, and we're going across, and at this point I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be a bone collector, because we're finding sheds and deadheads, and I'm kind of into that, so we're picking stuff up. And
but go back to where you and Phil saw those caribou, like, close to camp.
So about my third day in, it's just raining really hard, and we've been in the tent, and Phil, our pilot, he was like, man, I can't sit around anymore, let's go hunting. I said, yeah, I'm game with that. And it's just miserable conditions, but we get out on this ridge, and we're glassing the river, and all of a sudden, six reindeer just come barreling off this mountain and heading down the river. And I'm like, man, you know, that's 300 yards. Like, we can make that work. And we close the distance because they travel really fast. And we're looking at them just for a second because they're on the move. And I said, man, I think we can do better. I think there's some bigger deer out here. And this is really early on in the hunt. He goes, how much longer are you here? And I said, well, at least another 7 days. He goes, yeah, it's probably a good thing. Let's pass on them. And so, you know, at the end of the deal, like, I'm really glad I did, because I had one animal to kill. And so,
but we had like one day to spare when you shot your caribou. And so we talked about this just before we started this podcast, and we're grilling, and Adam's over here grilling, and we talked about, like, setting your expectations, like, going into a hunt. Like, if your expectations are, if you're going elk hunting and you're happy with that 5x5 and a good solid 6x6 walks out the first day, it's like, shoot or don't shoot. And everybody says, like, don't pass up the first day what you might kill on the last day. And oftentimes you might kill something and maybe see something bigger, but you don't, that's not guaranteed that you're going to see something bigger, you know. And you pass on a few small reindeer or caribou and you kill a giant bull. And that was just the argument that we were kind of bantering back and forth about. So we had a hell of a trip in Alaska.
Yeah.
We sustained some great weather and some really, really bad weather. We had a lot of things to overcome as far as UTVs breaking down and just getting stuck out there for a day or two, you know, being socked in. That's just Alaska. And we talked about that multiple times on previous podcasts. Let me introduce you guys to Adam. Adam's dad is blind. Adam didn't start hunting until he was 30. You heard him talk a little bit earlier. He's a hell of a cook. You can't find a better camp cook than Adam. And he's kind of a new hunter, and he's energetic just about hunting. And we've talked about what's been lost in hunting. You know, a lot of people go out there for a score, for a certain trophy. And I feel like, as a guide, that people kind of lose sight of, like, why you're really there. Like, why are you really there? Because if it's just for that trophy, like, everybody's wanting inches to be measured up and kind of measuring kind of competing with your neighbor, your brother. I mean, you need to be able to take in everything that's outside. You need to take in the bird life, the wildlife, the mule deer does, the elk, cows, the bugling. This afternoon we had great bugling. Adam's got an elk cow tag, and we sat on the hill this tonight sitting on water, and we heard some great bugles. This morning we had some action, and to me that's like 90% of it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. And we didn't see, I personally didn't see an elk today. I know Josh saw one way off, you know, 1,200 yards away.
We saw a bunch this morning, though.
Yeah, we saw a bunch this morning. That's right.
But they're a bit far off.
They were far off, and I had a great day. You know, I think the thing that drew me the most to hunting, why I decided at 30-some years old that, you know, I'm going to start being a hunter, you know, was the... You know, some of the stories that I heard from my friends and other people in my life that were, oh, we had a great time at deer camp. You know, we went up to, you know, because I'm from the Midwest and, you know, deer season's really short. You know, the Friday after Thanksgiving for a week, that's all you get for gun season. And, you know, you hear all your friends talking, oh, yeah, we were up at deer camp. We just had a great time and cooked food and sat around and chewed fat, and it was a good time. And then, you know, like, hey, you know, that's something I'd like to get into. And just taking off from my fishing background and the outdoors and the love of that, it was easy for me to kind of dive into it. I'm 41 now. I've shot my first deer 2 years ago.
Wow.
And I'd been hunting every year for 11 years or 9 years before I shot a deer. And I was in Wisconsin, negative 20 degrees, wind chill, negative 40, sitting out there in a deer stand, loving every minute of it. I was miserable.
Yeah, we don't deal with that in Texas.
No, I was miserable, but I loved it because, you know, I was just outside, and, you know, you don't feel closer to nature than when you're just sitting out in it.
So I feel like people lose that, that disconnect. Like when you leave the city, when you leave society and you get around a campfire or a kitchen, whatever, no matter what kind of situation you're in, and just that camaraderie and the storytelling, and it gets passed down from generation to generation. And we talked about earlier, like Josh's dad, my dad, my granddad, I mean, they kill more deer in a blue jean jacket out of a pickup or in a really crappy little brush blind in South Texas. And I feel like we're losing that knowledge of, like, understanding deer and understanding how deer act and understanding how elk act. And instead of understanding what you're hunting, we're trying to make up with that with technology, and that maybe from camo to whatever, the sky's the limit. I mean, it's just... Every hunt show's got something they're trying to sell you. And I'm not trying to sell you anything. And I'm happy to have you here, Adam. And I'm happy that Josh is here. And we are enjoying a little sausage on the grill in the background, jet bowl. We got some onions and potatoes cooking. And we're up here with no electricity, no running water, in this little bitty camp house. And I couldn't be happier right now.
I was happier when you told me we weren't staying in the normal camp house we stayed in the first night.
And
we
were coming up here. That's the funny thing. We had a choice. Yeah. You could either have electricity, a hot shower, you know, everything you want. But here we are. We got a flashlight because it's the only way for us to, like, see the food we're cooking. But, Trevor, it's funny when you were talking about, like, the knowledge that, say, granddad or dad passed down to you. I can remember hunting with my pops when I was little. And, you know, you talk about all the products and just being spoiled with, you know, all the extra gear and the things that you have. So, like, scent blockers, right? I think you guys talked about this on a previous podcast.
I bought,
like,
into that.
So yeah, far. I mean, you got, like, the soap, the shampoo, and everything. Yeah. So my dad, anytime we go somewhere, you know, the first thing he'd do is go find some cow crap, you know, and he'd say, stand in the cow crap, get it all over your feet. Mm-hmm. And that was our scent blocker. I mean, the deer are used to the cows or, you know, whatever you're hunting. And that didn't cost a dime. You know, there was no special technique. It's just knowledge of, you know, the arts that are lost. And, you know, it's, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. Just if you think about it, you know, a lot of people now, it seems like they do 90% of what they do or what they invest in so they can post a picture on Facebook. But there's so much more to the hunting world and the experience.
I think if you take yourself out of social media and you're not trying to brag and you just step back and you're with one or two good buddies like I am now, family members, good friends. And my dad used to do the same thing. And I that's how I learned it. He said, you know, step in that cow patty, get on your boots. If you're sitting next to a cedar bush or pine tree, break it off and rub it on your sleeve. Yeah. Like, break up your scent. And I'm not saying those products that they're producing now don't work or that the technology is not proven. I'm just saying there's a gap.
All right.
There's definitely a gap that we're losing. And I want to, like, at least retain that knowledge that I learned from my dad, you learned from your dad and your granddad and my granddad. And, you know, Adam, being the age he is, his dad's going blind, and we're going to get him on a deer soon.
Yep.
He will be able to shoulder the rifle and pull the trigger, and we're going to figure out exactly how to do this without him looking through the scope, because he can't see through the scope. And I think this winter, during a winter storm in Texas, Josh came over and helped you butcher an axis that you killed, and your dad felt that whole animal with his hands, because his hands are his eyes.
That's right.
And I can't imagine not having my eyes. My eyes are pretty bad, but not near that bad.
Right.
And so him appreciating that aspect of what you wanted to do then, and you sharing that with him is a big feat. And I don't think, like, a lot of people appreciate just the sights and the sounds and the smells, and especially your eyes. Because what we saw this morning, we probably saw 150, 200 head of elk.
Easy.
They weren't close. They were moving out over the ridges, and we weren't able to get on. We didn't want to push them out. We sat on the water, you know, for 4 hours this afternoon. Obviously, the elk are moving super late. Hopefully, we'll have better luck in the morning. But we're up here at elk camp cooking on a jet boil, and we have had a great time. I'm really appreciative for both of you guys being here with me and sharing this time with me. And I had a great hunt with Russell Sims, killed a big elk bull, got on a great mule deer, had a couple of antelope hunters. I got a couple of antelope hunters down at the main house at camp that came in tonight. And so after our hunt in the morning, we're going to hook up with them. And so another thing we talked about earlier before we started the podcast was, like, if you're a true trophy hunter or a true meat hunter, so a true trophy hunter is able to, like, pass up multiple animals waiting for that right opportunity, knowing that he might go home with nothing. And difference between, like, Western hunting, I'm talking like Western states, New Mexico, Wyoming, Colorado, Montana. You book a hunt. You book a hunt, and you pay for that hunt in full. In Texas and Africa, you may pay a daily rate, or you pay for a package, and then you pay for what you kill. It's different in Western states. You pay for the hunt up front, and whether you kill something or not, it's the same amount of money. So it's really hard for Texas hunters to understand. In Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, if you pay for a hunt and you pass up multiple animals and you go home empty-handed, it's still the same amount of money. And I explained that to Russell quite a bit. We talked about that when he was here. He's like, well, what if I don't get something? I'm like, it's the same amount of money. Like, if you have an opportunity, and there's people that get burned out on that. I mean, you may go elk hunting and never see an elk, and you're going to pay that amount of money. It's not about the trophy. It's not about the kill. It's about the hunt. You're paying for the hunt, because it takes a lot of logistical people and equipment to make that hunt go forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the other end, I think about these ranchers that are supplying the animals or supplying the land. I mean, 99% of the time, especially up here, that's a supplemental part, right? Like, it's a very small part of them actually making a living. It's just, so, I mean, you think about like us, right? We're getting around. Oh, this is a cattle ranch that we're on, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's not a hunting ranch. We're on a family ranch. That's a cattle ranch. Yeah.
So what are we doing? We're driving around, right? Anywhere you put a footprint, you're damaging the grass, right? So that actually cuts into a little bit of the profitability. So, I mean, if you're paying for a hunt, you're paying to hunt. You're not paying to kill.
You're not paying to kill. You're paying for the hunt.
It's just the opposite of going to some of these ranches in Texas where, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed to shoot a deer that you want, but you pay by how many points or inches that's on that deer. So it goes up and up and up the bigger you get. So which would you rather have, the opportunity to shoot a giant deer for a set price, or, well, I can't afford a 200-inch deer, I'm just going to shoot a 140 and, you know, call it a day.
Yeah, you know? So, like, that's where we've restructured our pricing. I'm trying to put the hunt back into hunting in Texas. We charge $7,500. If you like the deer, you kill it. And most of those deer are going to average 180 to 220.
See, that's great.
And it's, so, like,
most places aren't like that.
Because I got into a point where you get in a blind with a hunter in a stand in Texas, and there's tons of deer. But the problem is, instead of actually hunting, guys are price checking.
They have a price tag.
Yeah. So they have a budget.
Oh, I can't afford that one. I'm going to wait.
They have a budget, so they're like, what's that deer score? And then what's it cost? And then you go the next year, and the next year, and you go to like day three, and the guy's like, "Well, I want to go back and look at that big typical we saw on you know Friday afternoon." I'm like, "Well, I don't know if I can find that deer again." So our company's restructured things in Texas. Like, if you like a deer, you shoot that deer, no matter the score, because the measuring tape has ruined a lot of hunts for me.
Yeah, I agree.
And I've had guys go home disappointed because it wasn't as big as their neighbor's deer. If you like a deer or an elk or whatever you're hunting in the scope, you kill that deer, you should be proud as hell. Because you spent the time, you enjoyed the time, and you got a hell of a trophy.
Sure.
And now we're up here elk cow hunting, which kind of seems like, well, wah, wah, wah. But guess what? We get to experience the bugles, the rut. We're at the tail end of the Wyoming rut up here. We're second week in October. And, I mean, we heard bugles tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And
bugles like, this when morning. It kicked off, it was just like, is this like I mean, a little slice of heaven or what?
It's a little, like, complete silence, and you hear bugles in the background. You get to experience everything you can experience on a bull elk hunt, but Adam, you're here for the meat.
Like, yeah, and I could have bowed out after, you know, I didn't get drawn for that pronghorn. I could have said, well, I mean, I'm not, nobody mounts a cow elk. You know, that's not what
well, they you do. Might. I mean,
I wouldn't have a problem with because it, I mean, it would be a reminder of the good times.
That well, you're tall having. Enough.
But, oh, God. but it's, I could have said, you know, I'm done. I don't want to hunt this year. I'll just wait till I get drawn for a pronghorn. But I didn't because I like meat. There's no better game meat in North America, minus Alaska maybe, than an elk.
Elk's great.
And it's table fare. And yeah. I'm going to fill my freezer for the year.
Yeah, and think about, like, so leading up to the actual hunt, I mean, what'd you do? You were able to bring your wife and your daughter up. I mean, y'all did some fishing.
Yeah, you guys came up. You guys came up and went to Thermopolis and went fishing for a couple of days.
Man, we were on the Bighorn.
How old is your daughter?
She's 5.
Daughter's 5, and you took her trout fishing.
And, for 6 hours.
And she never wanted her phone, never wanted her iPad, and she had a hell of a time. And you said you had a great guide there.
Yeah, we had a great guide. Keith was his name. He was awesome with Harper, my daughter, and you know we just want to have a good time. We want to be out in nature, and we saw about 20 wild turkey, and we busted some whitetail that were sitting in the cottonwood trees, and we saw geese and eagle. We saw an eagle grab a trout out of the water, which was absolutely amazing. To see a bald eagle do that, and you know, I kept telling Keith, hey, we don't care if we catch fish because we're not fly fishermen by any stretch. So he brought us some spinning reels, and we were dragging a night crawler down the river, and we caught 20 rainbows, and my wife caught a 24-inch brown trout, which she has no idea how good of a fish that is. But it didn't matter because we were having such a good time. Just
I think that's what it's all about, man. I mean, like, if you just look at this weekend, right? Or I guess we're not yet the weekend, it feels like it, but we're going to look back and talk about this trip. I mean, everybody's probably tired of hearing about Alaska. We're never going to stop talking about it. You know I'm never going to. That's a dream come true. Like, and it was a dream come true not to kill a big bull, right? It's just a dream come true to go. And I mean, how many times we just earlier tonight we're talking about some of the other hunters that we met that were there at the same time.
Like, yeah.
I mean, just it's a whole thing about hunting. It impacts your whole life. You know, and like with Harper, you know, you pass that down. My wife texted me today that she was putting our kids down to sleep, and my youngest is 2 years old. He was telling her stories that I told him about that trip. I mean, I'm sure he got it all wrong, but it's just exciting. And, you know, I think that's what it's all about. Just hanging out, having a good time, making memories, right?
I think hunting will take you further into the outdoors than anything else.
Pursuit.
I think you can be a backpacker and it's going to take you so far. But hunting, being around like-minded people, and then the adversary, your game animal is the adversary. Whether it be a pronghorn antelope, elk, cow, caribou, what you killed, like, there's that challenge that you have to overcome. And it's like the trophy, but you don't actually get a buckle or a trophy for it.
Yeah.
And people are like, why do you hang that on the wall? Well, because that reminds me of my accomplishment. Every trophy in my house comes with a story.
Right.
There's some sort of accomplishment. I mean, some of my trophies I show off the bunkhouse back door. But some of those trophies I walked 15 miles to get.
Right.
And then I had to pack it out. You know, a moose bull is 9 trips with 2 guys. I mean, we live in a time that's the greatest time ever. We have all the technology, and I don't want to lose the story. I don't want to lose our inheritance of our grandfathers teaching us how to read game, how to understand game, why elk do what they do, why whitetail do what they do, why axis do what they do, which is axis is big in Texas, but they're nomadic and they move around. And it's great table fare, as is elk. And like I said, Adam's come up here, didn't draw an antelope tag. And I told Adam, I said, hey, man, you can get an over-the-counter elk tag and get a lot better table fare than antelope. Because antelope's
edible.
It's marginal. I grind most of it up and make it into smoke rings, fresh sausage. But you talk about an elk, you know, nice young elk, that's way better, and it's a lot more meat.
Way more, right?
And it's a lot cheaper. And, I mean, yeah, you're not going to have a mountain wall, but he may have an elk hide, and he can feed his family for the year. It's probably less expensive than going to the grocery store if you want pounded out. But not only that, you got the experience.
Right.
Like,
Think about, like, you know, the hunters that just left today, Rudy and Kelton, right? I mean, it's great uncle and I guess great nephew or however you classify that, but I mean, they got to spend time together. That's memories that they're going to have that last a lifetime. They had a successful hunt. You know, the picture I saw of Kelton with his pronghorn, like, huge smile.
And yeah, so
he never stopped smiling even until the time we dropped him off.
Yeah, so we had a little transition. I had Rudy and his great nephew come up and go antelope pronghorn antelope hunting. That's the only tags they could draw. Rudy's been putting in for mule deer again for the last 2 years. He drew a mule deer tag 3 years ago. And usually he brings like an older friend. And this time he brought his great nephew. And Rudy's been fighting cancer for about 12 years. Wow. As long as I've known him, he's been fighting cancer. And so what a great time. And even though it's only 3 days, but they will talk about that time that they spent here in Wyoming together hunting. And they both made great shots. And it's just, it's almost surreal.
Right.
Like, here's a guy that's, he's on his way out. He knows he's dying. He's fighting cancer tooth and claw. And takes his 20-year-old nephew, pays for his hunt, and spends quality time with him.
Right.
And then you not only came elk hunting, Adam, you took a couple extra days to go with your wife and your child to go fishing, which I think a lot of people should do. And I tell people that when they go to Africa, I'm like, don't just go hunting. Go tour. Like, if you're going to go to wherever hunting, Alaska, like when Josh and I went to Alaska, we went fishing for a couple of days before we went to hunt camp. Otherwise, we'd just flown to hunt camp, and that's all Josh would have seen. I took him to the southern part of Alaska fishing, and we had a great time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's a completely different world from where we're hunting.
Yeah. You know? It was pine trees. Also,
you know, a cool thing about that, you know, you find somebody that can show you around. I mean, the people that we met, that, you know, old buddies that you caught up with. It's like, there's just
meeting Wayne and seeing all his gun collection. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, the kind of people that when you meet somebody like that, and you know, if you're ever back there again, you can call them up and they'll just invite you right into their house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He feed you breakfast, give you a bed to sleep in. Yeah. Wayne's good as gold. So we're going to wrap this up, guys, because we're hungry and Adam has cooked a great meal for us. Right here at the Jet Boil. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Any last words, Adam, Josh?
Get out there and hunt.
Tomorrow's going to be a good day. We're going to get it done.
Yeah. Like Adam said, get out there. And if you get out there, know your expectations going into it. If you expect the highest of highs, you need to lower that. Because
or don't go home empty handed.
Don't pass up on the first day, which you're gonna kill on the last day, and don't be disappointed with that. And guys and girls, it's been a great trip. We've had a great time. Enjoy everybody that's listening. And this is Traps Lodge, Trapper Burke here, signing off. Maybe.
Hey everybody,
it's Trapper. Welcome back to Traps Lodge. We're just gonna record some bullshit sessions here. Josh Mayfield, Adam Land, Nathan. He won't say his last name, he likes to stay
Pavlisa.
I didn't know that was your last name.
You're like a hitman or
Czech
Czechoslovakian? Yeah. Sounds Italian, huh?
Sounds Russian.
Russian? All right, so Josh, what were you saying about your dad?
No, that he always told me the best camouflage you can have is just quit moving. Just be still.
Right.
You know, and it goes the same thing with, like, scent blocker. Go step in some cow crap.
Yeah.
And you smell like something that's there every day. You know?
Yeah.
Just simple practices.
Yeah, like if there's, like, cattle running on the land you're hunting, like, go step in a cow patty, or if you're hunting cedar country, just rub some cedar bushes on you.
Or throw a cedar branch in your bag while you're not wearing your clothes.
Right. And like South Texas, there's like a lot of sinisa and sage. You just like rub that underneath your armpits. So I've even like sat in a box blind with the wind. If the wind's wrong, I'll just take a cedar branch and crunch it up on the window. So like that kind of masks my scent as it's drifting.
Right.
And Adam, you were saying you bought into all the...
I spent hundreds of dollars on scent blocker stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously it didn't help me shoot anything.
Right.
And then I just quit doing it and just went out. And it was a lot more enjoyable, too, because I didn't have to have all my hunting clothes in a trash bag, double bagged, and keep it away from all my other stuff.
I think, like, the minute you... Like, even if you put your stuff on and you get in your pickup, you absorb the smells in your truck.
Absolutely.
My dogs are in there all the time. Yeah. And I see guys, like, they have their gear bag in the back of their truck, so they get out of their truck and they put all these extra clothes on. It's like so many more steps to try to conceal your scent that I don't think is 100% concealable. I mean, playing the wind, like Josh said, just don't move. Yeah. Like, deer pick up movement more than anything, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, like me being a novice at the time, how do you combat, okay, what do I really need and what do you really not need when you don't really have the
knowledge,
the tribal knowledge that you all grew up with?
Yeah, like I was just telling you guys earlier, I grew up, you know, it was walls and Carhartt, and you would just go build a brush blind underneath a tree and sit still, not even with a corn feeder, just like on a deer trail and hope to shoot something that walks within range. And you don't have a range finder back then, and you're shooting a little 223 and picking out the oak trees that are, you know, what you think are 75 or 100 yards away. And like we talked about last night on our drive up to the elk cabin, we're in a different cabin tonight, was just like, my fear is that technology is starting to wash away the general knowledge of understanding your game you're hunting and understanding how and why they do what they do. Like right now, Adam's got an elk tag. 3 days ago before Adam was here, it was brutally hot, like almost 85 degrees. Elk were coming to water super early. It was like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, I wasn't hunting elk. I was hunting deer with my deer hunter. Got him a really good mule deer, which hunting deer in the heat is not easy. I mean, we saw a lot more mule deer today with the weather change than I saw when I was mule deer hunting. But I saw a lot more elk when I was mule deer. That's how it always is. You always see the species you're not hunting. And they were coming down to water at 5:30, you know, in the afternoon. And then we're out antelope hunting today, and this morning we had some sunshine and had a good hunt with you. What's nice your
pronghorn?
Yeah, nice 200-yard shot on a pronghorn. It was a 6mm Creedmoor shooting. Yep. Yeah.
So I think that's probably the biggest advantage of technology with rifles is having better optics, you know, and you can make cleaner, more confident shots. But as far as just the hunting goes and how to get around and be stealthy and stuff like that, you know, those are definitely lost arts that either dad or granddad passed down or didn't have time to pass down. Or, you know, you see an ad on Facebook or whatever, and then you feel like that's just the way to go, right?
Yeah. I mean, the optics is definitely a huge plus. And you went to a shooting school, right?
Yeah, we went a few weeks ago out to 1270, and they definitely built confidence, but obviously had quite a bit to start off with.
Yeah.
You know, even with the old 3x9, Nikon 3x9s.
Like, yeah. I mean, those old holdover days, you know, and you didn't have a rangefinder, so you're like just guessing, yeah. Oh, I think he's 300 yards or I think he's 500 yards. And I talked about it before, like, those shooting schools do build confidence, and practicing shooting that distance does build confidence. But I want to tell people, like, on a game end, like, you can hit steel at 1,200 yards. That's probably not the shot you want to take on a trophy animal.
No.
I think you need to be a better hunter and stalk in to 300 or 400 yards to have more confidence in that kill shot. That's my mindset.
Yeah. I don't think you're effective at 1,200.
I think my longest kill shot was 1,100 on a mule deer with a 338 Lapua, and all the conditions were right. It was dead calm, nice cold morning, had all the time in the world to take the shot, and I had enough room to make a follow-up shot if need be, but I would never try that shot again. I think my second furthest shot's about 700, and that was just like on a pig,
yeah. You
know, something that you don't mind.
Pigs are good confidence builders,
you know.
Yeah.
Because you don't mind if you don't find it, especially in Texas, because most of the time we just roll them off in a ditch. So we got Adam's elk to go and one more pronghorn tomorrow. Weather's changing. We got some rain tonight. Temperature's dropping.
Russ had a good hunt.
Yeah, Russ Sims had a great hunt. We got lucky on that elk. Just went out that morning just trying to locate those herds leaving different waters and trying to locate like a big bull, because you normally if you see them leaving that water that morning, they're going to come back to that water that evening. Our plan was to sit on waters in the afternoons because it was pretty hot, and just caught that herd coming across the valley, and he made a great shot on that bull. And I was able to make a quick decision on whether it was a trophy or not, make sure he was all intact. Because this time of year, we're getting to the end of the rut, and a lot of those bulls we were seeing are broken up and busted up, like broken a lot of tines and stuff like that. So we got lucky there. Like, we passed an antelope today with a broken cutter, and he would have been a nice antelope, yeah. You know. But the only reason we passed him was because he had a broken prong, broken cutter. So, yeah. So, Em asked me to make you talk about your outdoor cooking, Adam.
Yeah, I mean...
Sausage again?
Sausage. I got into outdoor cooking, you know, not all that long ago. It was out of my wife's house, and when we were dating, and it was Thanksgiving, and it was just her and I, and said, you know what, I'm going to cook out on the fire tonight. And I was like, man, that was a lot of fun. And then it just kind of grew and grew and grew to where, you know, I do it every year for my wife's family's Christmas. We call it the cowboy breakfast, where I'll either do a hash, or I did pancakes one year.
Is it all on cast iron? Or?
Every bit of it is in cast iron, except for the coffee.
Except for last night,
yeah, we did it on the jet boil. But 90% of the time, I'm cooking on cast iron. It holds up well. I wouldn't want to pack it in the woods, but it's nice to, you know, do it when you're doing it at your house.
Yeah,
and I did it for your wedding, which was a lot of fun. You know, Josh helped out.
That was a great meal.
Man, that was we did like three different kinds of hash and. My favorite of toads in a hole, which is basically a cornmeal pancake with sausage and maple syrup in it.
What's a hash? What's considered hash?
So hash, in my mind, is anything that's left over from the day before.
Right.
It literally can be anything, but most of the time it's got potatoes, onions, peppers, some sort of meat, whether it be sausage or brisket or...
Leftover barbecue.
Leftover barbecue is the best hash.
Yeah.
Because you know it's got all that seasoning, and you know the fat is where a lot of flavor comes from in cooking, and it's got all that fat congealed on it. So then you get to soften it back up, and I always put eggs in my hash and cheese. Everything's better with cheese. So yeah, it's just literally whatever you got left over. So and it's great for you know situations like this. If we had dinner tonight. You know, we just do the same thing tomorrow, but I put eggs and cheese in it, and you know, it's easy and quick, and yeah. You're back out hunting.
Right.
I think it's cool about outdoor cooking is you don't have a recipe. A lot of times, just throw them together, and it always tastes so much better.
Almost never ever. And yeah. You know, smoke.
Yeah.
Smoke it adds a lot of flavor to it. You know, and you know, game meat. Is something, you know, I haven't cooked a lot of game meat in my cooking history just because I haven't been a very successful hunter in my history. But the game meat I have cooked, you know, it's kind of nice to cook it outside because that's where, you know, it is. And I don't know, it's just another connection of the whole process.
So, back to you, with the weird last name. Yeah. Say it one more time.
Pablisa.
So, this is your first trip to Wyoming.
Yep.
But you've done some out-of-state hunting before.
Yeah, we've shot some bear in New Mexico.
Bear in New Mexico with Casey, yeah. Right? Casey, yeah. Smith? Casey Smith. He's like a full-time hunter, like all time.
All over, yeah.
Hogs, bears, lions... West Texas.
We did a mountain lion hunt also last year. I didn't get a mountain lion. Tyson got one.
Yeah. Tyson's in the shower right now.
Yep.
He likes to stay underneath the radar too.
Yeah, he don't like to.
He's a non-Facebooker.
Oh, he's a Facebooker. Just on his wife's Facebook.
Oh, he's a sneaky. He's a closet Facebooker.
But no, we had a blast. It's been fun. We've been looking forward to this Wyoming trip for a while, so definitely look forward to booking another one.
Yeah, and you guys were talking about elk today, so mm-hmm. So we talked about points. Like last year, you guys bought a point, and then put in for the draw this year, and y'all were able to draw.
Right.
So antelope in this unit take a point. So, like, in Wyoming, I always got to tell people, like, this time of year, like, buy your point. And even and now they've changed it. Like, even if you don't draw, they used to automatically issue a point. Now that they don't, you've got to go back online and buy your point.
Yeah, so if you don't buy them every year, you lose it.
And if you don't buy it 2 years, like, I think it's 2 years consecutive. I got to look at that. But I think it's, if you don't buy it for 2 years, you lose them. So you always got to keep building your points. And a lot of Western states are on point systems. I think New Mexico is still on lottery. So Wyoming doesn't have any landowner tags that the landowners can sell out-of-staters. New Mexico does, which is that's very helpful in New Mexico. I don't know a lot about other states because those are mostly the two states I've outfitted and guided in. So Josh, what was y'all's day like? Y'all put in some miles today tracking,
yes,
trying to get on some elk cows.
So last night when we sat on the water, we saw a lot of a pretty good group of elk crossing up on this ridge, and they didn't come down to water. I guess if they did, it was really late. And so this morning we made a game plan to go ahead and kind of just walk where we saw those elk, because it seemed like they were pretty consistent.
They're coming and going over the fence, yeah. Yeah.
And so we got dropped off and basically tried to find a good ridge that we could stay below but also see a lot of country. And we made, I don't know, I want to say we probably did about 5 miles. Some of it was pretty
rough. 110 flights of stairs.
Yeah, Adam likes hiking, but he likes it less today than he ever did. But
that's right. I remember when Adam got out of the truck, he's like, man, like, I wouldn't be disappointed if there was an elk cow, like, right here close and handy. But he was like, I want to hunt. I want to enjoy my hunt. And then after I picked y'all guys up after 5 miles, he was like,
I'm never hunting with Josh again.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing he said, because you're like a mountain goat. And the second thing he says, like, yeah, I'm over the hunt part. I'm ready for, like, the kill part.
Yeah,
like,
ready to get some blood.
Yeah, ready to get some blood.
But we found a pretty good spot, and we glassed for a while, for about an hour, and then decided we need to make a move. And we had a game plan to head one direction, and I kind of just wanted to see what was right around the bend. It wasn't a very far walk, maybe like 100 yards.
Felt like 3 miles for Adam.
It was pretty flat at that point. But I'm sure, yeah, he was like already kind of needing some ibuprofen, I think. And took a look around, and sure enough, there was a pretty good-sized cow and an older calf that was there. And the bad part about it, not a really bad part, just kind of one of those conditions that you can't control, is that, you know, at 358 yards, I think it was, you know, Adam got her lined up at the scope, but he couldn't see anything because the glare of that morning sun was just right in our face. And our shooting window was about 30 seconds before she walked off of the timber.
So one thing I've learned to do, and it may or may have not worked in that scenario, is I've had to, like, take my ball cap off and almost block, like, the top half, right, of the front of the scope.
Shade or something.
And sometimes it works. But sometimes the scopes, or the sun's just, like, so much in that scope you just can't see. Right. But, like, if it's a higher sun and you can, like, shade that scope with your ball cap, sometimes it'll work. And granted, like, that gun's got a suppressor on it, so you're not worried about muzzle blasts and all that stuff. But it's really hard to do if you're trying to watch the shot, trying to hold your ball cap to, right, shade the scope, and trying to range all at the same time. And that's one thing about technologies we talk about. It's like, I used to go rangefinder, bino, and now they've got binos out there with rangefinders in them, and that's a big plus for me as a guide.
Right.
I think you've got the Vortex.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're pretty happy with it.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
I've got the Swarovski. It's quite a bit more money, but serves the same purpose. And Vortex has got a lifetime warranty. I've heard good things about them.
You know, we talk a lot about, like, losing or technology, or kind of losing what was passed down from other generations. And one thing that I've really come to appreciate is, if you are hunting with somebody, or if you're not hunting with somebody, being able to be in your own head about that shot. So, like Adam this morning, I mean, we were really moving, and at a little bit of elevation, elevated heart rate, breathing. But, like, if you've got that person with you, that, like, you know, trappers got the knowledge of, oh, man, you can just take your ball cap, create yourself a little bit of shade, and really improve that condition. But then also being able to talk to the shooter and
calm him down,
yeah. You know, and not make it, you know, a 30-second shooting window sometimes feels like an eternity, but most of the time is pretty quick.
There it is.
But just being like, take your time, make a clean, healthy shot.
So I relax. Feel like you can slow that down in your mind. So as a guide, we talked about this the other day. If the guide's like, shoot, 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 there's your shot. Got to take it now. The hunter's already excited.
Right.
They're already, heart rate's already elevated. You know, they already got buck fever. So being able to talk your client through the shot calmly, because I believe, and I tell my clients, like, if you're not comfortable with the shot, don't take it. Like, I would rather that animal walk away, we hunt again tomorrow, than us be tracking a wounded animal. Because then you're not going to get any sleep that night.
Right.
Because you're so sick to your stomach about wounding something. So your first shot's the most important shot. So I always say, be sure of your first shot. Be confident in your first shot. And if your scope is just all over the place, you're breathing too heavy, you can't just, like, calm yourself down and, like, just come into that zone and control it and make that shot, just let it go. Like, yeah. Take your eye off the scope, take a couple deep breaths, try to refocus. If you just can't bring it together, then just live another day.
Yeah. You know, one thing you taught me, Trapper, was if you have time, dry fire on the animal.
Yeah.
You know, that takes all of the anticipation out of it, because you've shot that animal without actually placing a bullet, you know? So yeah. Now your mind is already prepared and stuff. But that's a perfect situation. You don't always have that kind of time.
If the wind is right and you're far enough away, a dry fire is great. I've actually made the mistake of dry firing on something and the wind be wrong and they hear it click.
Yeah.
And then they just, like, blow out. And I'm like, I shouldn't have dry fired. I should have just shot.
Right.
But oftentimes, like, when I get in a blind with a hunter, and it doesn't hurt the rifle, the dry fire. I used to think it did, and I'm talking to a lot of gun builders, and they're like, it won't hurt it at all. So I get in a blind, especially with, like, a young hunter or a novice hunter, and I'm like, okay, pick that tree out at, like, 200 yards and dry fire on it a couple times. And I'll make them do it till they're comfortable. And so that way when the deer steps out that they want, they've already kind of gone through that motion. Right. And usually the first thing I do when I get on a range with a hunter is I have them dry fire before they ever shoot at a target. And I'm not watching the target. I'm watching the shooter to see how their form is and then if they're jerking it. And then when you dry fire, you can feel yourself jerking or pulling left or right or whatever. And then you, like, kind of catch yourself like, oh, I'm jerking the hell out of it, you know? Right. And trigger pull, we talk about that, like, trigger weight. You've got a pretty light trigger on your gun.
I forgot how light it was.
You forgot how light it was today? You missed the prairie dog at 100 yards?
Yeah, the antelope I hit the first time.
So we talked about factory guns having pretty heavy trigger, you know, 4 or 5 plus pounds. I feel like a 2 pound trigger is about what most people
are. What's that thing at 1.7?
Most people are comfortable with. I've got a rifle that's too light. It's probably like a pound and a half. And it's too light for a lot of clients. I've got a little bit of rain coming down now. It's going to be sloppy tomorrow. So, yeah, that's another thing. About
another variable, right?
Yeah, another variable. Just, that's hunting. I mean, we went from 80 degrees and we're going to have snow by midweek, but we should be wrapped up by then.
There's a problem I have with when I'm hunting. Shooting, I'm okay with it, but when I'm hunting, I have a tendency as, like, as soon as I shoot, pull my head up to see what happens.
Yeah, so.
Right? So I gotta say in my head, you know, I'd say stay calm and stay down. You know, stay down on your shot. You know, it's like following through with a golf swing, right?
Yeah, that's what I call it, is follow through. Keeping your head down. Like, ideally, you wanna take the recoil and bring your head back down on the scope and see your young people and novice hunters often pick their head up because they think they can see better without the scope.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Which, yeah, well, the nice thing about the suppressors is, like, Josh on his reindeer, like, he could see every hit he was making because it takes so much recoil out that it doesn't knock you off the scope. And it's like you said, it's like follow through with a jump shot or a golf swing. And that's just that repetition of practice. Just doing it repetitively until you weed out those variables. I had a guy one time that picked his head up so bad that he scope ringed himself in his cheek because he was picking his head up before he even poured the trigger.
Yeah. On that is pronghorn today, you know, like he made this shot. And before everybody else with glasses, you know, he goes, what'd you hit? Right in the heart, right in the what?
Pump station.
Right in the pump station. I mean, he watched that shot hit, you know, just a heart shot. But he saw the whole thing through the scope, you know, the perfect follow through. So it's, if you can watch your bullet hit your animal, then you tell yourself, I'm going to watch the hit through the scope. I think that helps a lot.
I often say, like squeezing the trigger, pulling the trigger. So if you drew like a target on a piece of paper, and you had a pencil in your hand, and you try to hit the bullseye like super fast, well, you're probably gonna miss.
Right.
So if you just imagine yourself pushing that pencil through that bullseye at a slow speed, like right, that's exactly where I want that bullet to go, and that should be like your trigger pull, like squeezing a thing of toothpaste. You don't want to squeeze it so hard that all the toothpaste comes out. It's a slow, easy, steady. So like, as you're exhaling, and a lot of people hold their breath and then squeeze. I exhale as I'm squeezing and pull the trigger. And I've told Adam the other day when we were on the target, like if you're on sticks or your crosshairs are floating, like doing figure eights is what I call it, like just bouncing everywhere. If you can get that crosshair into like a rhythm with your breathing, kind of, I try to do it up and down. Mm-hmm. And as I exhale and my crosshairs are starting to sink onto my target, at the same time I'm starting to squeeze that trigger, so it's like one fluid motion all at once. Like as I'm exhaling, coming down, and I'm squeezing.
Right.
Now, sometimes I've messed that up and I've shot over an animal because I'm too fast on the trigger.
Right. Yeah, it's like my granddad always taught me, exhale out halfway, hold, squeeze, and then you could finish your breath. And then Eric had a different technique. I think his technique was probably a lot like yours. But then when we were in Alaska, when we went down to find his bull, he goes, hey, man, you remember all that breathing stuff I was talking to you about? And I said, yeah. He goes, I didn't do any of that. He said, I just kind of felt the shot. Like, I was just in the zone, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you're that focused, which he really was, you know. So
he was on the scope things for a long time on that bull. We had a lot of time on that bull. There's often times when a shot's so fast that you don't even – think about
like shooting birds, you know, it's reactive sometimes.
Yeah, you just don't even think about your breath or whatever. Oftentimes I just exhale as far out as I can and squeeze out. A lot of people suck as much air as they can in and hold it. I feel like when I hold it, my heart starts beating faster. What did your shooting guys say?
We didn't even go into that.
Nathan, you didn't, yeah. Your shooting guy didn't talk about,
no, we didn't breathing? Talk about breathing.
Because, like, that's a really important thing in shooting, is your inhale and exhale. And everybody's kind of got a different theory on it. I think it's all about what you're comfortable with. I feel like when I hold my breath, my heart rate goes up, and I can feel, like, the gun shake with my heartbeat. So I just try to get
I always shoot as I exhale, and then right as I'm done.
Yeah, right.
That's whenever I...
That's kind of how I shoot, yeah. I kind of... squeeze at the end of my exhale. And I've heard people say, well, you don't know how much air is in your lungs, so you can't exhale all the way.
But I'm like, stop, though.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't.
When your eyes start turning red. And...
Yeah. I think holding your breath is hard. It makes it more difficult. I think it needs to be a fluid thing, like a fluid motion. Like a almost like yoga. I hate to say that word. But like,
How about, okay, so you've gone through that initial shot, and then when you calculate, do I need a follow-up shot, right? Even if you've made a good shot, do I need a follow-up shot? So that's something I've always thought about. You know, last year I killed an axis buck, but I made 3 good shots on him, but he just kept getting up, you know, just kept wanting to travel on me. And I've lost some deer, you know, that I thought, oh, man, that deer's down, and then I take my eyes off him for a second, can never find him again. I mean, sometimes, like, I don't know.
So there's a lot to say about that. So I think if you can watch the hit through the scope and you know it's a good hit, I think be patient, especially if you're wanting the meat.
Mm-hmm.
and you know it's like in the, what do you say, Nathan?
The pump station.
In the pump station, you let him go down and die.
Yeah.
And then there's the old timers that I used to hunt with in Colorado and New Mexico. They're like, you keep shooting until that animal's down.
Right.
You know, you empty your clip. I've had some novice hunters not reload. I think reloading, like shooting and reloading, it should be like an automatic reaction. I've also run into the problem with, like, they shoot, the animal goes down, we go to start taking pictures, and I'm like, wait a minute, is that gun safe? And it's loaded.
Right.
Yeah. Because they reloaded, and it didn't, because it was an instant reaction of them reloading, they forgot the rifle's loaded. So I'm like, okay, wait, we need to unload your rifle, because it's pointing at me, and I'm taking pictures with my phone.
Yeah.
And it's a bit eerie at that moment.
Yeah.
But obviously reloading and a follow-up shot, and especially if it's in a situation where that animal can go over a ridge or go into a brush line and get away from you, definitely take a follow-up shot.
Right.
So, and on that same topic, Josh and I were mentioning this today. We were talking about, we were up walking the fence line, and you said, well, it really suck if you shot that, you shot an elk and it jumped over a fence. Well, if I shoot it and jump over a fence and it goes on somebody's property, what's the etiquette there? What are you supposed to do?
Well, the etiquette should be, and well, it is in Texas, you call that property owner. And usually guys are pretty neighborly, especially up here and especially in Texas. Like, hey, I shot a buck or I shot a deer and on my side, and it's, I believe it's on your side, or I can see it on your side, it's dead. May I retrieve it? Because the worst thing you could do is, we always think, well, nobody's going to see me over there. Then, lo and behold, that rancher hadn't driven that fence line in 10 years, and here he comes in his Ranger. Well, then you look like an asshole. So the best thing to do is call ahead.
Yeah.
And say, I think the etiquette is to be friendly.
Yeah.
You know? And if they want to be jerks about it, then there's nothing you can do about it. At that point, I mean, if it's private property, and I've even had it on public land where I've had like a public land elk go on a private land and it just be a small parcel. I didn't have a person's phone number, I had to go knock on the door hoping not to get shot and be like, hey, we shot an elk bull with a bow and arrow and it's dead on your property, like 10 feet inside your property. Can we retrieve it? And the little old lady was like, oh, yeah, sure. If you have any extra elk meat, can I have it? And so we gave her like the back strap, and she was happy as could be. So I think being good people, you know, being sportsmen is important.
Yeah, and the last thing you want to do is look like a poacher.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think being ethical is important.
Man. Pretty good banner. Just typical hunting camp talk, right?
Yeah, we're just missing Tyson. He's hiding out on us, isn't he? Yeah,
I think he's got a warrant out or something. He don't want to be caught.
He can hear us.
Tyson, you want to come join us? Talk about your antelope that you haven't shot yet?
He did blow up some prairie dogs, though.
He did shoot some prairie dogs today. So that's the first I've heard of a 6mm Creedmoor.
Yeah.
What grain is that? 100?
103.
So it's a souped-up 243, basically. Well, that rain's coming down now. It's going to be a sloppy day tomorrow. I guess that about wraps up our banner. If we get any more going, I guess we'll hit the record button again.
I'm sure it'll kick off.
Yeah, one more drink, it'll keep going. Any last words, Josh? Any last advice?
I don't have any advice, but, you know, one thing that I can say, and I think I reflect on this every time I'm outdoors, it's just how beautiful it is, right? Like Wyoming, your first trip to Wyoming, right? And it's, I mean, everywhere you go is so different and so unique. And we're all Texas boys here, and you just get out to a country that's completely different than what you're used to, and you're seeing animals that you can't see in your backyard. And I think a big part of just enjoying the hunt is enjoying the experience, you know, just pictures don't do it justice, but no. If you could take a picture, it'll remind you of the thoughts you had while you were there. And
I say take a lot of pictures, take them often, even of the silly things. Not necessarily just your trophy kill, but like the place you stayed, where you slept, what you ate,
yeah,
the landscape, the sunrises, the sunsets. And it's funny because we kind of take Texas for granted because we live there.
Right.
But the people we hunt with in Wyoming here, they come down to Texas every year and they enjoy it and love it there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's different from what they're used to, their everyday life.
Right.
So being able to get out and explore and be in different places is important. I mean, you were in Alaska and it was wet there. Well, granted, it's raining.
It's raining
Wyoming.
Now. It hadn't rained all year.
Hadn't rained all year, and Josh shows up in Wyoming. Now it's raining.
Did you see that it rained at our house? Yeah.
So it's super dry climate in Wyoming. We use a lot of chapstick, drink a lot of water up here because we're just not used to this low humidity. But it's been a great trip. Nathan got a great antelope today. Made a great shot on him. Tyson's hiding.
He'll get one tomorrow.
He'll get one tomorrow. Then you guys will drive back to Texas. We've got to get Adam his elk cow in the morning. The pressure is definitely built. The pressure is definitely
no pressure,
built.
Man. I've enjoyed my time here. So that's worth the price of admission.
So we're going to give her hell in the morning and let this rain puss to sleep. So everybody thinks that we're listening to Traps Lodge. Josh and Adam and Nathan here just BSing in the cabin, and we'll catch you next time.